The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Edinburgh Books Podcast, in which we'll bring you highlights from the World Writers' Conference, which has taken centre stage at the Books Festival over the last 5 days. 50 writers from nearly 30 countries eating, drinking and making mayhem in a series of tents in the middle of Edinburgh. How could it not be thrilling? True, it hasn't posed quite the danger to life and limb as the 1962 conference on which it was modelled, but as one wag pointed out, that might have something to do with the invention of plastic wine glasses. But these contemporaries have been revisiting the same themes as their predecessors. I'm Claire Armistead, books editor of The Guardian and Observer. Let's start with the question, should literature be political? Chairing that debate was Elif Shafak, whose best-selling book The Bastard of Istanbul led to her being accused of insulting Turkishness. She could have been the first person to be jailed in Turkey for writing fictitious words spoken by an invented person. In the event, the charges were thrown out. We caught up with her after the session.
It's been an exciting week for us, actually, at the Writers' Conference. The first day I chaired a session. It was quite special, 50 writers from different genres, different countries, different ethnic, religious backgrounds, not to mention different standpoints. And the question we tackled with was, should literature be political? We also tied that into the recent events happening in the world today. What's going to be the literature in such a fast-moving, fast-changing world? I think we writers don't really find such occasions very often. It's a rare opportunity for us to also understand each other. At the end of the day, I think we're very self-centered individuals and our work thrives upon solitude. You know, we're in our own corners, in our own bubbles. So such occasions also give us a chance to get out of those bubbles. I really enjoyed being part of this. I think it was a great treat for the soul and for the mind.
Did you feel that there was a consensus that literature should be political or shouldn't, or indeed whether that question should be asked in the first place?
I think I won't be wrong if I say most of us were kind of not very comfortable with the word should. You know, the moment you start saying literature should do this or should not do that, that kind of straitjacket is not something we're comfortable with. But at the same time, everybody, I think, agreed that, you know, being a writer means to care about what's happening in the world, not to ignore, you know, the sorrows, the pains that people are going through. Keep an eye on that, you know, reflect that in your writing. So there was a big interest in politics, but not in an ideological sense, but in terms of, you know, not being disconnected from the world.
There are people from many different countries at the festival, and you yourself are from Turkey. Yeah. Do you have a sense of different countries addressing very different political issues? I know that Adaf Suef, in her opening address, was talking about how Egyptian writers are turning away from fiction towards factual writing.
Yes, I think there are cultural contexts or geographical contexts that we need to take into account. Like, the role of the novel has been very special in Turkey, in my country. Sometimes I feel like I'm living two completely different lives because my life in London and my life in Istanbul are so different. Because in Turkey, writers, especially novelists, are like public figures, and you get asked all kinds of questions in your readings and in events. Here, the role of the writer is slightly different. But the novel, particularly in Turkey, has played a tremendous role in Turkish modernization, westernization. So it has always been connected with, you know, the social, cultural and political changes in the society.
Elif Shafak there, expressing a rather different experience to that of the keynote speaker, Adaf Suef, who reported that Egyptians were turning away from the novel as inadequate to describe recent political upheavals. Afterwards, I caught up with some of the other delegates who chipped in from the floor.
My name is Xi Chuan, I'm from China, I'm a poet. In China, I think when we talk about political things, then things could be, I have to say, much more complicated than this. It's not just a thing, whether it's correct or wrong, because, for instance, style could be political. In a time when all writers write in a realistic style, then if you are a modernist, then you are political. In China, maybe we have some suspicions of ourselves. If you believe that you are right, then things are simple. If you are suspicious of yourselves, then things could be much more complicated. China is taking such a bend like a river. there are so many conflicts, so many contradictions, so many different ideas.
This conference is going to go on to Beijing in due course during the year. How do you think it will go down in Beijing? Will it be able to be discussed, these issues be able to be discussed freely?
It will be discussed, but I think people will have different ideas. Some people might feel that literature is a tool for us to use to change the society.
I'm Denise Miner from Scotland, and I think all literature, all narrative, all poetry is inherently political. And Orwell and Stanley Fish both said that everything is political, but we think things are neutral if they chime with the status quo. Then they seem to be have no political content. And I think you have to differentiate between reflexive and what talks about political situations at the moment. And I'm talking about politics with a small p. And causative, and are you attempting to affect social change, which is a completely different question. So, I mean, I think at the conference, really all we got to do was start defining the question, because it's such an enormous question.
And the question will roll on round the world, won't it?
It's going to roll on round the world for a year, and people can participate through the internet, which is what's so exciting about this conference compared to the other one. Although the other one was very open, because of technology, we can actually hear people, and the audience will decide what are going to be the points of discussion.
Next up was the style versus content debate, in which the Scottish writer Ali Smith argued in dazzling style that story should come first and style fits it. But according to the Argentinian writer Carlos Gomera, things have moved on a bit since the days of William Burroughs.
I think it's a different problem. In the 60s, probably the push was towards finding new forms, fragmentation, the death of the novel, experimentation. You had like the Young Turks or the avant-garde against the old guard. Those were the terms of the discussion. Of course, in the 80s and 90s, we had this call to order, back to narrative, back to homogeneous verbal texture, goodbye to experimentation, which I think was something that benefited the market more than it benefited literature. And now, in a way, there were moments when the discussion was the other way around, like those who spoke for experimentation or the avant-garde were seen as the dinosaurs who had not caught up on how literature had changed.
Carlos Gomera there. Next up was the vexed issue of national literatures. Richard Lee caught up with Carmilla Shamsi and Alan Bissett.
Irvin Welsh started us off, and he equated internationalism with the global marketplace in a not positive manner at all, and said the global marketplace wants to erase difference and wants a certain kind of literature to the exclusion of all else. So that was one of the big points he was raising. And then we got the question of Scottishness and Englishness.
And how was this received?
In different ways. I mean, there were quite a few people who stood up, I think, and agreed about this whole idea that cosmopolitanism was a danger, and that there should be...
That there's something worth preserving.
But then you had someone like Kapka Kasabova standing up and saying, look, I'm from, three different countries. Thank God for cosmopolitanism. And why are we denigrating it in this manner?
As a Scottish writer, Alan, what did you make of this?
Well, I knew which side of the fence I was on, but at the same time, there are no demonstrable falsehoods in this issue. The people who were appealing for internationalism were doing so with good intentions, and I believed in what they had to say. As a Scottish writer who feels that their culture and their literature is often marginalised in a very colonial way, I feel that there's nothing necessarily wrong with protectionism, with advancing the cause of your national literature, as long as that literature does not become fixed and really comes from the state downwards. Because I think if we leave our national identity, any national identity, to the politicians or to the market, we get quite a distorted identity that then becomes used to either promote careers or sell a particular product or brand or tourism, and the real country goes unobserved. And the real country exists underneath the radar where the writers are and comes from the people. So that's my idea of a national literature. It's literature from below that builds up a composite picture of a nation's identity, which should be inclusive and should be multicultural. That, to me, does not seem like a dangerous thing.
There's even questions of choice of language for some authors who are living in countries where there's more than one language that is available to them. Is this another way of exploding the idea that the nation is a monolithic entity?
Well, I'm now speaking about what it's like in Pakistan, where it's not necessarily a choice. I mean, English is the only language I know well enough to write in. And for some Urdu writers, it's Urdu, and for some it's Punjabi. But the fact is, whatever language you use, that's a very fraught political question because there are huge tensions within it. And so interestingly, a national literature doesn't mean in one language, and it doesn't mean everyone in the nation can read it. But you know, and I agree with Alan, and I also think it's very important to have this idea of literature as the place that bears witness, literature as a place of contesting official history and of filling official historical silences. And that, to me, when I think of national literature, that's what I think of. And it doesn't mean it's not also serving an international, you know, readership.
Exactly. I would agree with that. I don't think nationalism excludes internationalism. I don't think the idea, if you're writing from a particular place, if you see yourself as, say, a Scottish writer, that means you're completely ignorant of world affairs and that you don't care what's happening in other countries and that the characters in your book aren't having conversations about what might be happening in Iraq or America. You know, we're informed by a global pop culture, we're informed by consumerism. These languages find their way into any regional discourse. So the national literature is, by definition, international anyway.
What have you made of the conference as it's developed? Has it changed character from the beginning? Are you getting to know each other a little better now?
Yeah, I think it's been interesting how the mood has been changing every day, and you can tell almost immediately from the beginning of a session. So day one, we were all quite polite, I think, or most of us were. Afterwards, because we, you know, we do talk beyond the sessions, which is the important point, and some of the most interesting and, you know, fraught in a good way conversations happened there. And many of us left and said, well, I didn't agree with this and I didn't agree with that. And then we all said, tomorrow we're going to go in, you know, and we're going to say it. And so we went in on day two feeling quite punchy, but the subject was style versus content, so no one knew what to be punchy about, really. So there was this feeling of punchiness that wasn't really attached to anything. And I think day three with national literature gave us an opportunity to really lock horns in a more interesting way. Mm-hmm. And it did feel the most sort of combative of the sessions, and frustrating as well in certain ways, because we couldn't quite agree on the terms, and we, you know, where you were coming from, you know, you had such different views of what you want to talk about. And somehow today we walked in, and from the first it just felt more relaxed, and that people were going to say what they would, but you somehow knew that no big fight was going to happen. I don't know how we knew this, but it was sort of instantly obvious, I thought.
Well, what came out, I think, was that there are various different forms of censorship. There's traditional state censorship, there's market censorship, there's self-censorship. I think the debate about political correctness was an important one, and I actually very much agreed with what Ben Okri had to say, that of late, I think in the last 10 or 15 years, there's been this tendency to presume that if you're against political correctness, you're somehow a radical championing free speech, where what you're actually doing is allowing some quite insidious ideas back in, racist ideas and homophobic ideas, in the name of free speech. It's not to say people shouldn't be allowed to challenge political correctness, but I sometimes think that takes place under false pretenses. You can see any comedian on the fringe any night of the week invoking the spirit of Bill Hicks, and actually just really what they are is a straight misogynist. And I think all of these ideas were ebbing and flowing. Jackie Kay made a very good point about autobiography. Do we have the right to talk about other people who are still alive? Say, if a black writer represents a black character as a villain, does that then make them irresponsible? Whereas a white writer representing a white character as the villain, that's simply just narrative. There was a really good ebb and flow of ideas. But in terms of the spirit of the 1962 conference, which was obviously very exciting and inspiring in all sorts of ways, but actually I think that the more I read about it, the more it seems like quite an immature way to go about a discussion between intelligent people. You know, phrases like scum being used, and the tone of the debate, the enormous egos, people sort of grabbing the mic and hogging it for minutes on end. And it sounds like a bear pit. And actually that, I think, is what the media want from this conference. But I'm actually glad that's not the conference I'm in. I'd rather discuss intelligent ideas with people who know how to be civil with each other. Surely that's in keeping with the spirit of this festival.
Carmen Ashamsi and Alan Bissett there. The next day's event was Patrick Ness, who was making a case that censorship is no longer just a question of states crossing out what writers have produced, but more a question, certainly for writers living in the comfortable West, of whether they are bold enough to say the stories that they really want to.
What do we censor in ourselves? What do we not say sitting down in front of a page? And I know the immediate reaction to that is, well, I don't censor anything. I mean, I consider myself a brave writer, but if you push harder and harder, there are things we won't write about. I mean, the long question is, where is the follow-up or the sister novel to the Satanic Verses? We all approve of his right to write it, but who's going to write it now? And that is a bigger question than you might think. And so that's basically what it's about. What do you stop yourself from writing? I think writers have to negotiate with their audience. They have to meet them halfway. They have to discuss with them. They have to bring them along on the ride. And there's a feeling, and I think an erroneous one, that adult writers don't. And I don't believe that that's true. I think adult writers also need to reach and also do reach. It's a negotiation. And what I was trying to get across is that that negotiation becomes more difficult in a world where people will stop listening to you because you have one opinion but not the other.
Patrick Ness there, suggesting that the problem lies perhaps with us or perhaps with me, rather than anybody else. Claire, you were at today's debate where China Mieville was talking about the future of the novel and suggesting that the future of the novelist may be in becoming a little less special. What did you make of that?
China is a brilliant cultural provocateur as well as a great novelist, and he made some really startling points. He denounced existing copyright law, though he insisted that he really, really wanted to continue to pay his mortgage, because some of us wondered how that was going to be squared. He imagined a future in which fiction becomes collaborative with what he calls guerrilla editors making mashups of writers' work. And perhaps most idealistically, he posited the idea of a state stipend for writers, which would bring writing in line with other forms of labour, though he did admit that the state would have to change radically in order for that to be possible.
A minor detail. Once we've overthrown the state and made it into a properly democratic, functioning society, do you think people in the floor were convinced by his vision of writers as rather more of an interactive community?
No, actually, there were some very strenuous cases made against it, both on economic grounds, but also on creative grounds. And the point was made that actually collaborative fiction rarely works. Collaborative stories tend to run into the buffer fairly quickly.
To have delegates become more and more passionate as the weeks developed.
Yeah, it started off a bit polite, actually, and it was quite ironic that it was the political debate that was first. And the gloves were definitely on then, and they've gradually come off. And we've done some very bold things. We've sent a letter to the state of Arizona decrying its policy on censoring Latino culture. We held a 30-second silence for the people of Syria. I mean, it is quite tempting to have a little bit of tongue-in-cheek about it. These writers are very seriously. They do take themselves very seriously. But then, you know, there is a sense perhaps that the rest of the world doesn't take them as seriously as they want to be taken. And there was another point that came out of it, which was a few bellicose poets and memoirists saying that the novel itself was suppressing, possibly censoring, other forms.
Jackie Kay suggesting that fiction had squashed other forms like a behemoth. But how do you think this conference has measured up to the conference of 50 years ago?
Well, there was less bad behaviour, certainly, and it wasn't all down to the plastic wine glasses. But I also think there was less energy and fizz and less hope for the future and less of a sense that, however passionately people disagreed, they were engaging in the same conversation. There were sort of fragments of different conversations coming in from all over the world.
Juno Diaz damned it with faint praise.
What ends up happening when you have these first instances, yeah, when no one knows any of the rules yet, people just go nuts. And they didn't realize that this was going to last forever. Their comments and their interventions, some of them which were insane, plus the energy that was around it. I mean, that's a community that, you know, at that moment, this was the absolute novelty. And people came and they came and they were ready to talk. And there was, from my sense of it, from the clips that I saw, you're just stunned by how people were human. I think that writers' festivals and writers' conventions, they're wonderful because you get an opportunity as a reader to be celebrated and to be in conversations with other readers in ways that are not possible any other time in our society. I mean, think about how few spaces there are in our world for readers to be honored and to be in conversation. In that way, one doesn't need any raucousness, doesn't need authors attacking each other, authors accusing each other of political this and that to make it revolutionary. For me, what's most extraordinary has little to do with the writers, yeah, and has a lot to do with what I'm seeing right here, a huge line of readers, completely different kinds of people. Look at their faces, look at the families, look at the couples, look at the young people, and you suddenly understand that we live in a society that doesn't honor these people enough. We spend so much time talking about writers, what the reality is that none of us would exist. We're all beneficiaries of this sort of invisible affection, this invisible love. And I think in that way, and I think in a very significant way, has this been an equal to any of the festivals, an opportunity for folks to get together and to address a often maligned love, which is the love of reading.
Do you think it's too early to tell whether or not the conference has made a change to any of these writers and to what they may come up with in the future?
The great thing about this conference is it is a starting point, and it's going to roll out around the world from now on. And in September, for example, it's going to Cape Town, and there will be discussions by people like Anki Krog, the Afrikaner writer. And I was talking to the person who's running that festival, and he was saying, oh, there's a real argument with what the titles of the session should be. Everybody wants to do the political one there. Nobody wants to do style versus content. So I think that that's going to actually be really interesting, how it evolves as it trundles its way around the world.
And I guess the final reckoning will be if a novel or a novelist comes out of this with something new to say.
Well, actually, the final reckoning, I think, has to go to the audience member who I caught exiting. He turned to his companion and he said, "You say Zeitgeist, I say Zeitgeist, let's call the whole thing off." And the wonderful thing about that is you'd have to understand German in order to be able to read it. So does that not make the whole point of the conference?
Don't you Brits feel like celebrating those 14 days of sporting glory? Of course you do. So why not do it with a strictly unofficial but suitably stylish Philosophy Football Design t-shirt? This unique t-shirt is a wearable, chronological, and color-coded record of an unforgettable fortnight. And for Guardian and Observer podcast fans, we have a special offer of £3 off and free post and packaging. Curious? Well, to see how good this unique t-shirt looks and to take advantage of our listeners' offer, just go to guardian.co.uk/podcast offers. I dare you.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.